from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen from Southern California, this is the Le Show program, and just happened to notice a couple things this week. One, at the Universal Studios tour in Hollywood, and we're so darn proud of it. It's one of our great tourist attractions. As a matter of fact, if you don't count Disneyland, it's our only. Anyway, at the Universal Studio tour, I saw this on a bus billboard this week, you know, the bus sign. The 12 Days of Christmas Parade at Universal. It ran from December 13th through January 1st. The 12 Days of Christmas Parade did. The math does itself, ladies and gentlemen. I also noticed this week, thanks to the Pittsburgh desk. About 3 months ago, First Lady Laura Bush, in a speech to the National Book Festival, told a charming anecdote about her husband. According to the White House website, here's what she said. Quote, "We delight in great works of literature, and especially in the work of budding new artists. President Bush is a great leader and husband, but I bet you didn't know he's also quite the poet. Upon returning home last night from my long trip to Europe, I found a lovely poem waiting for me. Normally, I wouldn't share something so personal, but since we're celebrating great writers, I can't resist. Dear Laura, roses are red, violets are blue. Oh, my lump in the bed, how I've missed you. Roses are redder, bluer am I, seeing you kissed by that charming French guy. The dogs and the cat, they miss you too. Barney's still mad you dropped him. He ate your shoe. The distance, my dear, has been such a barrier. Next time you want an adventure, just land on a carrier." Last week on Meet the Press, she was shown the clip of her remarks and the poem. And then Tim Russert asked her, "Now, who could have written that poem?" And Laura Bush answered, "Well, of course, he didn't really write the poem. But a lot of people really believe that he did. That evening at the dinner, what some woman from across the table said, 'You just don't know how great it is to have a husband who would write a poem for you.'" Unquote. It's just, you know, when the amateurs try humor, the pros have to turn to politics. Hello, welcome to the show. Of course, if Hillary had done that, they'd just say, "She can't help but lie." On the other hand, Laura Bush has had the same hair color and hairstyle for 30 years, so. Happy New Year!
Yes, we're gonna have a windy summer smoker on the ground. It's just a dugout that my dad built. Overseas. Do you have a steady boyfriend?
over the Halong Moon, rise over the river of Gethsemane. Now there's a pain in your head, puts lead in your shoes, but I gotta seem to, it's gonna be bad news. How did the perfect words get so confused? Oh, Gethsemane. Gethsemane. We sucked out the freedom days without end, under the weight of an hour you must bend.
From the home of the homeless, from the edge of America, I'm Harry Shearer with this, still another broadcast of the show for, the first one, as a matter of fact, for 19. Hello, how are you? Nice to see you. I've been resting. For 2004. Isn't that exciting just to say it? Nope. But we've hit Mars, and as far as we know, Mars hasn't hit back yet, unless you count network television. Ladies and gentlemen, at the beginning of this of a new year, one might ask, so how do we stand? How are things going? How are we doing? And fortunately, a conservative British newspaper gives us a heads up on the topic, at least insofar as Iraq is concerned. Security. Now, this is a conservative, pro-war British newspaper, The Telegraph, doing their roundup of how things stand in Iraq. Security, this remains the most pressing issue for Iraqis. On the streets of Baghdad, everyone has a tale of armed robbery, kidnap, rape, or murder. That, they say, would have been inconceivable under Saddam Hussein. Women and children are rarely allowed out of doors. The number of deaths by violent crime has more than tripled compared with pre-war levels. The coalition has reestablished an Iraqi police force. More about that in a moment. Numbers are now nearing the estimated 70,000 required, although they are often poorly equipped. Even so, many Iraqis feel they have no one to turn to if they're the victim of crime. Ransoms are often paid to resolve kidnappings, for example. Hey, that's just like Latin America. We've brought it up to the level of Latin America. It will take 2 years, says The Telegraph, to bring the recently reformed Iraqi army up to the 40,000 required to police the country's borders. In the center of the country, once cowed into order by a fear of Saddam, towns such as Ramadi and Fallujah have become a byword for lawlessness. That's not a knock. Electricity. Current production is hovering around two-thirds of the pre-war level. That's after only 8 months. The coalition briefly topped pre-war production in October, but supply has now slipped back and does not meet demand. Fuel, providing reliable access to cheap gas and cooking gas, remains beyond the coalition. While gas-guzzling, this is the conservative British newspaper, The Telegraph, ladies and gentlemen. While gas-guzzling U.S. Humvees and coalition four-wheel drives roam around unhindered, lines up to several miles long stretch from every gas station in Baghdad. The coalition provisional authority recently imposed 30-liter quotas and limited drivers to buying gasoline only one day in two. Iraq, with the world's second biggest oil reserves, is now importing fuel. The Coalition Provisional Authority blames sabotage of fuel lines, smuggling, and an influx of imported vehicles for the crisis. Under Saddam, gasoline cost the equivalent of about 60 pence for 100 liters. Who knows what that is? It's British. Says one senior Coalition Provisional Authority official this week of the gasoline situation, it really is inexcusable. 8 months in, we should have got it right by now. Health. Doctors are better paid under the coalition. Many salaries have increased eightfold, but conditions remain desperate. Iraq's 240 hospitals and 1,200 clinics are open, but many are dirty and without stocks of medicines and drugs. Coalition says it has delivered more than 12,000 tons of pharmaceuticals since the end of the war, but will take far longer to bring Iraq's healthcare system into the modern age. On the whole, though, pre-war standards have at least been maintained. Water. Sewage treatment in Baghdad once depended on three specialized plants which were destroyed and looted during the war. They're not expected back in service for another year. Even the coalition admits that in the capital, only two-thirds of the population is getting adequate water supplies. Schools, the coalition's success story, about which more in a moment. An enormous effort was put into repairing damaged schools for the autumn term and beginning the process of expunging Saddam from the textbooks. Iraq's schools are filled with neatly uniformed children. The salaries of Iraq's teachers have increased 12-fold. The coalition is putting in place scholarships for foreign study and has decided to focus on equipping universities with internet access so students can have access to modern research. So that's the summary from a conservative source in Britain on how we stand in Iraq. Sounds good. Man, good progress. As to the police, the same newspaper reports this. 9 months after the demise of Saddam Hussein, I haven't heard this inside the bubble. 9 months after the demise of Saddam Hussein's regime and his feared Mukhabarat, which was his intelligence secret police kind of deal, Iraq is getting a secret police force again, courtesy of the United States. The Bush administration will fund the new agency in the latest initiative to root out Ba'athist loyalists behind the continuing insurgency. The force will cost up to $3 billion over the next 3 years, in money that comes from the same part of the federal budget used to fund the CIA. Its ranks are to be drawn from Iraqi exile groups, Kurdish and Shiite forces, in addition to former agents of the Mukhabarat, the feared Saddam secret police. They've turned. They're now working for the Americans. Said a former U.S. intelligence officer familiar with the plan, the group could be expected to be fairly ruthless in dealing with the remnants of Saddam. Former CIA officials compare the operation to the Phoenix program in Vietnam. Anybody old enough to remember that? That was such a good program. I think the city of Phoenix was named after it. It was launched in 1967. The program sought to destroy the civilian infrastructure supporting the Viet Cong through assassinations and abductions secretly authorized by Washington. Vincent Canestraro, former chief of CIA counterterrorism, says they're clearly cooking up joint teams to do Phoenix-like things like they did in Vietnam. He said small units of U.S. special forces would work with their Iraqi counterparts on covert operations. The counterparts would include former members of the Mukhabarat. The force is intended to take on a crucial role for Washington in post-Saddam Iraq. The Pentagon and CIA have told the White House that this organization will allow America to maintain control over the direction of the country as sovereignty is handed over to the Iraqi people during the course of this year. Says John Pike, an expert on classified military budgets at the Washington-based Global Security Organization, quote, the creation of a well-functioning local secret police that in effect is a branch of the CIA is part of the general handover strategy. If you are in control of the secret police in a country, then you don't really have to worry too much about who collects the garbage. In the short term, unquote, in the short term, CIA officials expect that the very existence of a strongly pro-American security force will terrify civilians who are currently supporting the insurgency into refusing assistance and aid to Ba'athist rebels. says Pike, the expert on classified military budgets, quote, the presence of a powerful secret police loyal to the Americans will mean that the new Iraqi political regime will not stray outside the perimeters the U.S. wants to set. The new Iraqi government will reign, but not rule, unquote. We hate the reign. We like the rule. Oh, I got it backwards. And, ooh, this is partly from inside the bubble. This is from the Chicago Tribune. News about the Iraqi schools that are the strong point in the U.S. effort so far. The U.S. desire for visible progress in Iraq has made for important quick fixes, but allowed some of the toughest problems to be pushed aside. Bechtel, the San Francisco-based contractor charged with putting the schools back in order, has passed over Mutzhabel High School, once the Mosul's most important and largest high school. Then it was overcome by the Iraqi army, overrun by the Iraqi army, and filled with deadly weapons, so it was bombed by the U.S. Coalition leaders vowed to rebuild it, and Mosul educational officials quickly identified Mutzhabel as their number one need, but it hasn't been fixed yet. As I say, Bechtel has passed it over in favor of faster, easier jobs. More than 1,000 schools across Iraq benefited this summer from fresh coats of paint, new doors and windows, hand-painted murals, and shiny new drinking fountains. The U.S.-led coalition heralds those improvements as proof of on-the-ground progress in Iraq. But major repairs in Iraq and in Mosul in particular are going slowly. A reason for the slow pace of repairs, according to Iraqi and coalition officials, is the broad leeway given to Bechtel. The contracting giant has been able to choose what it wants to rebuild. As such, it has the power to make pivotal decisions about Iraq's recovery and the quality of life in communities such as Mosul. The schools are just one example. The city listed 100 schools in dire need. Bechtel contractors assessed each school and decided which projects they would undertake. In many cases in Mosul, they declined. By the school's school term start, they'd fixed 50 of 100 schools. The company wanted to repair schools clustered together to reduce costs and risks. Bechtel's top manager in Mosul, Richard Hayes, says schools were chosen as part of a, quote, quick fix program, unquote. The job order specified a number of schools, he says. It didn't define where they would be or what they would be. We did very little structural work. We fixed all the doors and bathrooms and ceiling. It was reasonable. It wasn't structural. The view we had was to spend no more than 3 weeks on any one school, he said. In the end, says an army official, an army major, we had to cater to what Bechtel wanted to do because they had the money. Bechtel is also responsible for supplying pipes and connections for Mosul's near-disastrous water and sewer network. Months have passed. Those supplies have yet to arrive. So, it's good progress. Is it good enough, ladies and gentlemen? Hey, I'm going to make you a bet right now, and I'm not a betting man. I'm not even a betting woman. There's a lot of chatter. No, sorry, chatter's now got a very specific meaning. There's a lot of that, too. There's a lot of jabber about when and where Saddam Hussein's trial will be held and in front of what tribunal. Here's money. Here's cash money on the table right now. Imaginary, of course, because it's radio. Right here. Saying something's going to happen. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You know that. I'm a humorist. But I find it hard to believe, ladies and gentlemen, that a trial with the transparency demanded by world opinion, see, I told you I'm a humorist, on worldwide television will take place wherein Saddam will be sworn in, and then we'll start to talk about what countries might have helped him during the war with Iran. Yeah, I mean it. or help supply precursors for chemical and biological weapons? During an election year? I don't know. I just don't buy it. You saw the color of my money. It was radio colored, but anyway, that's my bet. But what do I know? I'm just a radio humorist. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, The Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
Here's a guy who should have apologized a million times by now. Basketball coach Bob Knight. Tuesday night of this week, he officially apologized for berating a reporter, Fran Fraschilla, with an obscenity-laced tirade. I'm on a crusade. Sorry, a mission to see that people can clarify the difference between, can at least observe the difference between profanity and obscenity. This is obviously a profanity-laced tirade. Quote, "I think as a person I always have a right to my opinion," Knight said. "But I think as a representative of the university," yes, he's still got a job at a university, "there should have been a way that I would have expressed that opinion over the question that was asked with a different choice of words. I've talked to the university about that and have apologized to them for that and really understand what should have happened and what I wish would have happened," he concluded. Well, Fraschilla is at ESPN. He was a head coach at several universities, too. Anyway. Bob Knight apologizes, ladies and gentlemen. Rip out the front page. Crocodile hunter Steve Irwin has apologized for causing alarm by holding his one-month son near a feeding crocodile during a show at his zoo on Queensland's Sunshine Coast. Yes, he has a private zoo. But the crocodile hunter has also defended his actions and will not rule out a repeat performance. That's one version. There's also been reports that he's considering withdrawing from public life. He's all over the place, this Steve Irwin. He appeared at Australia's zoo over the weekend to confront the world's media. He says he is sorry the incident has alarmed people, but it's important to teach his children crocodile awareness. "I had a safe working distance with that crocodile when that took place," he said. "I'm so sorry that it's got to this, but that's the way it is. If I could have my time again, I probably would do things a little differently," he said. "But I'd be considered a bad parent if I didn't teach my children to be crocodile savvy, because they live here. They live in crocodile territory." Police and families department officers had received complaints about the incident, which was part of a show at the Australia Zoo billed as Bob's Croc Feeding Debut. Bob is Steve Irwin's month-old son. Acting Queensland Premier Terry McEnroth says the Department of Families contacted Mr. Irwin and his wife Terry after they received several complaints. "I think anyone that saw the television footage would have been shocked by it," he said. But they claim the child was not in danger. Irwin also in his statement expressed deep regret that he was being compared to Michael Jackson, who dangled his kid from a balcony in Germany last year. He said the very idea, this is Steve Irwin talking, "the very idea of being compared with Michael Jackson makes me vomit." So can we get some ice cubes to Steve? The Tarrant Baptist Association in Fort Worth, Texas has unanimously approved an apology for slavery in Texas as part of a broader effort to see a resolution passed by the legislature. "We want to serve as an example," said the Reverend Wesley Shotwell, pastor of Ash Creek Church. Each of the association pastors, about 50, voted in favor of the resolution. Black leaders praised the resolution, which directs the State Board of Education to study how slavery is taught in schools. It also calls for the establishment of a scholarship fund, a museum, and a memorial. Reverend Howard Caver said the resolution amounts to spiritual reparations. "It's not trying to make anyone feel guilty," he said. "We're talking about the past." Reverend Clyde Glazener, who was white, said he had concerns about the resolution, but after consulting with black pastors, concluded it was a statement that needed to be made. So, Texas. Some Texas Baptists apologizing for slavery. Ladies and gentlemen, it is 2004. Minnesota State Representative Dick Borrell apologized publicly in a letter this week for accidentally carrying a gun into the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport this month. Borrell, a Republican, not that that matters, was arrested when baggage screeners found a loaded Derringer in his carry-on luggage. He said he was traveling with his 84-year-old mother. Oh, then it's understandable. To visit relatives in Texas for... Oh, that's understandable. For Christmas. Oh, well, there you go. And had hastily packed a carry-on bag that he usually keeps in his car. Well, see? I was shocked and totally embarrassed to realize I'd mistakenly left my handgun in the carry-on bag, he wrote. So this is what he normally needs to get around Minnesota, is a Derringer, ladies and gentlemen. After a screening machine detected the pistol, Burrell was handcuffed at a checkpoint, then charged with failing to disclose the weapon, which was confiscated. He was allowed to continue his trip. On a later flight, he faces a misdemeanor hearing next month. And Wednesday, December 17th, started out as a pretty typical day at the BP plant in Pasadena, Texas, until a package was hand-delivered to one of the chemical process agents. The shift foreman opened the package, and instead of electrical equipment, batteries, or other material commonly shipped to a chemical plant, the parcel contained white powder and a note that said, quote, "Death to BP employees." The foreman nearly had a heart attack. Workers in the control room were frantic, thinking they'd just been contaminated with a lethal dose of poison, according to union leaders briefed on the situation. Instead of getting rushed to the hospital, employees learned 30 to 45 minutes after the package was opened that it was only a drill, says Rodney Pardon, president of Local 46,000, which represents the employees. Not being warned ahead of time or told sooner angered Pardon. Someone could have had a heart attack, he said. They should never put anyone through that fear for a test. Pete Sella, unit leader of the Olefin Specialties and Derivatives business for BP, agrees and says he wants to apologize to the employees who believed they had been exposed to anthrax. "We are sorry for the undue stress the test caused," said Sella, who's in charge of the plant. He said the incident had prompted the company to reevaluate the way it does its emergency preparedness training exercises. He says, though, he believes the foreman who received the parcel as well as the workers knew within 5 minutes they weren't in danger. He said, "We just want to test how people handle stress, but there is a line we don't want to cross." A former Secret Service agent, Christopher Falkenberg, president of a company which plans and carries out safety drills for companies in New York City, says employees should act as if it were a real emergency. They should know it's a drill. Note in the box of powder, he said, should say, "This is a drill, but react as if it's not." Jim Lefton, international representative for the union that represents the employees, says the union is already looking into filing a criminal complaint despite the apology. "It was such a boneheaded thing to do," he said. And here's the quote of the week. "You wouldn't expect that out of a major corporation."
Whenever skies look gray to me and trouble begins to brew, whenever the winter winds, they get too strong, I concentrate on you. When fortune cries nay, 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 nay to me, and people declare that you're through, whenever the blues become the only song, I concentrate on you. On your smile, that's sweet, and it's so tender. When at first my kiss you do decline, on the light in your eyes when you surrender, once again our arms intertwine. And so when wise men say to me that love's young dream never comes true, to prove that even the wise men can be wrong, I concentrate on you. And so when wise men say to me that love's young dream doesn't come true,
to prove the wise men can be wrong. I concentrate on you. I infiltrate, concentrate on you.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, a tale of airport security. Seems to be in the news, doesn't it? This is on a weekend when reports indicate that British Airways is going to refuse to fly planes with air marshals on them. But we'll hear more about that, I'm sure, on the real news, won't we? They'll make room. Anyway, this is from a listener. On New Year's Eve, during one of the highest airport security days ever, my new wife and I flew home from Hawaii. Oh, sorry. As I approached the security gate, I remembered that I was carrying a pair of scissors that I use in my magic act for cutting ropes and such in my carry-on. I approached the baggage inspectors and told them, I just remembered that I have a pair of scissors in my bag. Should I get them out? I was told, you can't bring that on the plane. I agreed. I realize I'm going to have to surrender it, I said. He said, yes, you can get it out, or you can let us find it for you using the scanner. They put my bag through the imaging machine. Even knowing what they were looking for, they didn't find the scissors. They waved for me to take the bag. I took my bag and boarded the plane. During the flight, I was rummaging through my carry-on for a book and found the scissors. Tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. Often imitated, seldom imitated. And now, let's get to the important news, shall we? Because, you know, we can just spend so much time on this world and, I don't know, the world is too much with us. Who said that? Oh, I did. I'm on the radio. The celebrity story of the week, of course, the appearance of Michael Jackson last Sunday on 60 Minutes, followed almost immediately by a Michael Jackson entertainment special. I'm using the word entertainment loosely, on the same network this past Friday night. Basically, it was a clip show of some of his old appearances combined with encomiums from various celebrities, advertised by CBS as Michael Jackson as you've never seen him before, because it was basically a clip show of previous appearances. Anyway, the New York Times got into a little controversy by reporting on its front page that CBS had paid Michael Jackson $1 million on top of the fee already negotiated for the entertainment special to induce him to sit for the 60 Minutes interview, with the suggestion that the money may have come from CBS Entertainment rather than CBS News to give CBS News deniability when they, in fact, as they did, in tones of pained outrage, denied that they paid Michael Jackson, said CBS News does not pay for interviews. And there was a great deal of controversy in media circles about the story in the later part of the week. As it turned out, apparently the entertainment special didn't do all that well, and Michael Jackson's representatives said they were disappointed that it didn't air before Christmas because they were hoping it was going to move a lot of CDs. One of his representatives, I believe it was Charles Koppelman, said, we would have paid CBS to air it before Christmas. It does seem to, well, it may cast a little shadow over 60 Minutes. Who knows? One way to find out, I guess, would be to experience another bad day at Black Rock next here on Le Show.
In 3, 2.
Tonight on the CBS Evening.
Hold, please.
Excuse me, please.
We're on a hold, Dan.
I know that, sir. Pardon me. I didn't blow out of the Coon Farm on last night's milk truck. But I didn't even get a chance to say the name of the broadcast.
Name of the show comes after the whoosh, Dan.
He says the name of the...
I did hear what he said, boss. Mm-hmm. And what he means, I'm sure, is the name of the broadcast.
Right. Standing by. Recueing the whoosh.
What Dave Letterman does is a show. He does it whip smart and Brazos River water good. What Ray Romano does is a show. What Brother Larry King does is a show. We do a broadcast. Big difference. Key. So?
Still waiting on the whoosh.
All right, sir. But please.
We're rolling.
In 3, 2.
Tonight.
Go.
On the CBS Evening News.
We're holding.
See, sir, I didn't know where to come back in.
We didn't hear the whoosh down here, Peter.
Fine in here.
Well.
Yeah, we heard it that time.
You know what, Doctor? Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a stretch. Maybe hit the can. Well. By the time you've recued the whoosh, I'll be back.
Okay, Daniel.
You know, you could watch where your brother rather.
Michael, sir, you're a more welcome sight right now than a fly to a toad.
I'm going to take that as a compliment.
Doing some work for 60?
Yeah, just on my way to taping some gazintas and gazautas.
Happy New Year, Daniel.
Oh, I don't know, Michael. It may cost you something to talk to me now. Maybe $1 million and I'll throw in an entertainment special.
Daniel, if there's one thing that separates you from your audience, it's that you still believe what you read in the New York Times. You know Brother Hewitt pretty well.
Like to think we're battery pack tight and subway car close.
Well, at the twilight of a career that may well be the greatest and the last of the network news giants, you think he's going to blow it all on paying $1 million to interview some dance floor mummy? Daniel, as the kids say, get real.
Michael, you folks up at 60 have had the luxury of not getting real the last little while since you're still the ratings darlings of the news division.
Well,
but you know what I'm doing right now?
Talking to me for free.
What I'm doing in there, partner.
Mm.
I'm doing promos where I have to wait for the sound effect before I can finish my...
Brother rather, we've been stuck with a damn ticking stopwatch for the past 30 years.
Mm.
You know why? Because when 60 premiered, they wouldn't give us a music budget. That's reality.
Michael, all I'm saying is you lie down with prairie dogs, you get up with prairie fleas.
For the first 6 years we were on the air, people would come up to me and say, you're the guy on that show with the stopwatch. And I'd say...
The broadcast with the stopwatch.
Right. What's your sound effect?
Sort of a whoosh.
So you'll be the guy on the broadcast with the whoosh. But you'll still be the guy.
Brother Wallace, everybody's on the show with the whoosh. I guess if you let the fearless leader of the network make package deals with fading superstars for you, you don't have to join the posse. But news, sports, everything's got to have a whoosh on it. Network research says it keeps under 30s from tuning out.
What, it makes them think something big's about to happen?
Yes, sir. Another whoosh about 7 seconds later. No, sir, after 53 years in the business of learning the craft of communicating the drama and the comedy of the day's news,
mm-hmm.
pulling some sense of coherence out of the jaws of chaos,
mm-hmm.
I'm having to adjust my pacing for a whoosh.
Look, Daniel, I'm not saying that Brother Hewitt might not be in a devil's bargain whereby... Mm-hmm. Certain funds are transferred out of certain Viacom accounts without the word CBS News appearing anywhere on the paperwork. And I'm not saying that I would have done the interview if Brother Hewitt had asked me. Fortunately, that option wasn't open for me because Brother Bradley more clearly fit the criteria for the assignment.
Which were?
You had to be black. Look, Daniel, it's not that different from deciding that if you get an exclusive interview with Donald Rumsfeld, you don't send Andy Rooney to do it.
Brother Wallace, I know only one thing, and this I know.
Mm-hmm.
If you get an exclusive interview with Donald Rumsfeld, he doesn't turn up on your network the following Friday in an hour-long commercial for his new record.
No, I suppose not. You're back early this year.
I was up in the mountains, made the mistake of opening the paper one day. There's a CBS spokesperson expressing the hope that I'll continue anchoring the evening news for the foreseeable future. And scared the pips out of me. So I'll be getting back to being straight man for a whoosh.
You sure you couldn't use a Neverland ashtray? I could talk to somebody.
No, thank you, sir. You take care, Brother Wallace.
You too, Daniel. Okay, he's back. Here we go.
Sorry, sir. Long line at the urinal.
In 3, 2...
Tonight, on the CBS Evening News, reality check. Is your child's dentist...
Hold.
Dan, you pause between news and reality. That's for the second whoosh.
Pause between news and reality. Got it.
In 3, 2...
Tonight, on the CBS Evening News, reality check. Is your child's dentist old enough to practice?
Nos fala de querer, mas bebe pra esquecer, vive pra se suicidar. Se trens daqui vem de lá, coca no Guaraná, a retrovolução, sussurros em Sergipe. Some-se Mississippi, mas cresci no Irajá. Abluzei assim de porra e sorri meu nem. Eu sou silibilicei, sem ice on holiday. Gente na Irandei, meu Deus, como eu apanhei. Minha vida suruba downtown. Um é azul e triste, o outro reza e peca, e ainda é um tipo de cueca. Peca, e ainda é um tipo de cueca. meu Deus, sem beca de partida, sujou legal na saída.
Ladies and gentlemen, save your money, because this is a new year, and things are changing at www.harrychair.com. In just a little while, it's going to be totally retooled. Let's put it this way. It's going to be fixed before the schools in Mosul, and you'll be able to buy stuff, like very rare television things and very unrare television, all sorts of stuff. I can't tell you too much about it because that would be advertising, but harryshearer.com, not being fixed by Bechtel, let's put it that way. And that's not a knock. And here's something else I almost never mention because it's... This is so far in the back of my mind. But there is this occasional email, very low impact, low, just text, no, nothing to download, email blast that I send out from time to time, sometimes weekly, sometimes less often. And as I say, maybe once every 6 months I remember to announce how you can subscribe to it. Here's the address, leblast, L-E-B-L-A-S-T, hyphen, subscribe, leblast, hyphen, subscribe, at luxmedia.com. Lux is spelled L-U-X. How would you spell it? And with that depressingly nimble bass playing, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to put the cap on this. It's going to put the Le Show Chapeau on this edition of the broadcast. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, across the vast sweep of North America on Sirius satellite radio, and girdling the globe via the internet on your computer at two different locations whenever you want it, www.harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it'd be just like the 12 days of Christmas at Universal, lasting all year long, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Thank you. email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. The show playlists, usually available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.